can continue their mass vaccination efforts at Ratliff Stadium uninterrupted for the rest of the week. Trevor Tankersley, Director of Public Relations for MCHS, confirmed the hospital received a second shipment of 3,900 doses of the Pfizer vaccine on Monday. Vaccinations are being offered from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said. Tippin said the hospital is expecting weekly shipments of the Pfizer vaccine through at least February. The tentative plan is to then offer shots at Odessa Regional Medical Center and various clinics throughout the country. To speed up the process at Ratliff Stadium, officials are asking the public to pre-register online at https://secure.echd.org/qdregvax/default.aspx. The pre-registration link is not for setting up an appointment or a specific date and time to receive the vaccination. It's a pre-registration tool that will speed up the process of administering the vaccine. People who don't pre-register prior to arriving at the stadium will be rerouted to a waiting area where they will have to register before they can proceed to the vaccination area.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 30s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Wednesday, January 27th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Here are some of the articles that we'll be reading during the program today. Pfizer says it's laying the groundwork for vaccine booster against variants. AstraZeneca will speak Wednesday at emergency meeting of CDC advisors. Biden announces purchase of 200 million more doses of Moderna and Pfizer coronavirus vaccines. U.S. consumers may be about to get the first standards for face masks. January has been the deadliest month for COVID-19, with nearly 80,000 lives lost in the U.S. so far. New coronavirus variants threaten to stress U.S. system more. Governor Greg Abbott pushes legislature to push to protect businesses from coronavirus-related lawsuits. Texans receiving federal food assistance could soon get more aid under Joe Biden's executive order. And point of order, funding Texas schools during a pandemic. First, we'll take a look at the numbers this afternoon. For the Odessa and Ector County numbers, we're looking at the Texas Health and Human Services map. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 6,929. Probable cases, 6,418. Fatalities, 286. Estimated active cases, 1,804. Estimated recovered, 11,257. And now we'll take the Midland County numbers from the Midland Reporter Telegram. The percentage of COVID patients in hospital beds in the region that includes Midland-Odessa was 9.35%, the third lowest percentage of the 23 regions in the state on Monday, behind only Wichita Falls and San Angelo. Midland Health reported 73% of the 295 inpatient rooms were filled as of Tuesday morning. COVID patients make up 18% of the inpatient population. The positivity report of tests taken at Midland Health Centers through Monday was 12.9%, which is lower than the 16.3% rate last week. The city reported the total number of COVID-related deaths during the pandemic is up to 217. For City of Midland cases this week, As of Sunday, 19 confirmed. And then as of Monday, they report 90 unconfirmed. From the Texas Tribune, Texas now reporting a record average of 300 COVID-19 deaths a day. Average new cases decreased by 639 cases compared with the seven-day average a week ago. On January 26th, 21,813 new confirmed cases and 3,651 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations are also trending downward in an encouraging look. They decreased by 1,077 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 26th, 12,851 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 19 deaths compared with the seven-day average a week ago. On January 26th, 307 new deaths were reported. First, we'll take a look at coronavirus briefs. As the global number of coronavirus cases passed 100 million, a quarter of them from the United States, an increasingly acrimonious battle between the European Union and the British-Swedish drug maker AstraZeneca over delays in delivering supplies burst into the open Wednesday. A suspicious package also sent a plant in Wales where the AstraZeneca vaccine is produced into lockdown. Pharmaceutical company Workhart UK, which operates the site, said it had partially evacuated the area while authorities investigate, according to BBC News. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said the coronavirus isn't spreading in schools that take precautions, but views differ on what those measures need to be. A House subcommittee probing a government deal to buy $70 million worth of ventilators after a Washington Post investigation found that they were ineffective at treating COVID-19 patients and remain in warehouses. Chicago public schools suspended in-person learning after instructors defied orders to return to classrooms amid fears of a teacher strike. China introduced anal swab coronavirus tests, claiming they are more accurate than nasal and throat swabs. Wisconsin State Senate votes to end statewide mask mandate. World Health Organization team in Wuhan to begin long-delayed coronavirus investigation after clearing quarantine. Pharmacist signs plea agreement after vaccines removed from cold storage and left to spoil. Several hundred White House officials have been vaccinated. Business exec and his wife charged after flying to remote Canadian town to get COVID-19 vaccine, officials say. Now to our articles. Pfizer says it's laying the groundwork for vaccine booster against variants, from CNN's Amanda Seely. Pfizer said Tuesday it's laying the groundwork to create a vaccine booster that could respond to coronavirus variants. We should not be frightened, but I think we need to be prepared, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla said during the Bloomberg The Year Ahead event Tuesday. Once we discover something that is not as effective, we will very, very quickly produce a booster dose that will be a small variation to the current one. Bourla said the company had discussed variants in the past and created a process to help it adapt quickly. We were working on a progress that will allow us to do the development very fast, Bourla said. Now already we have started implementing this process. In a statement to CNN on Tuesday, Pfizer emphasized that the process is to respond if a variant of SARS-CoV-2 shows evidence of escaping immunity by our vaccine. However, the studies needed to evaluate a vaccine that encodes an updated viral antigen have yet to be determined in agreement with regulators. We will need to generate data that gives confidence that any updated vaccine is safe and effective. The updated vaccine to be administered as a booster would be subject to regulatory approval or authorization, the statement said. Last week, Ugur Sahin, who helped invent the BioNTech vaccine, is being made and distributed by Pfizer, tested his vaccine against the B117 variant, first seen in the UK. The team found no biologically significant difference in neutralization activity, they reported in a preprint report, but they said it would be prudent to start tweaking the vaccine just in case. Vaccine maker Moderna announced on Monday two doses of its vaccine are expected to be protective against emerging strains of the coronavirus detected so far. But out of an abundance of caution, it planned to test booster shots. AstraZeneca will speak Wednesday at emergency meeting of CDC advisors. From CNN's Michael Nettleman. Vaccine maker AstraZeneca has confirmed to CNN that a representative of the company will speak Wednesday at an emergency meeting of advisors to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. CNN previously reported the upcoming meeting agenda lists an unspecified COVID-19 vaccine manufacturer in attendance. An AstraZeneca spokesperson did not share further details on what its representative plans to discuss. The CDC advisory group, known as the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, will address a number of topics over the day-long meeting, including progress in administering vaccine doses, safety of the vaccines, testing of the vaccines in children, and studies on the effectiveness of the vaccine. ACIP members are not expected to vote during the meeting, said a CDC spokesperson previously. AstraZeneca's vaccine has not been authorized for emergency use in the United States, but it has in other countries, such as the UK and India. In September, its trial was put on pause in the US after a trial volunteer in the UK developed neurological symptoms. The trial resumed in the US about 6 weeks later, after a review by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration concluded it was safe to do so. Biden announces purchase of 200 million more doses of Moderna and Pfizer coronavirus vaccines. From CNN's Maggie Fox. President Biden announced Tuesday that the U.S. is buying 200 million more doses of coronavirus vaccines and hopes to have them by summer as part of a package of measures aimed at speeding up and increasing vaccine supply for the U.S. The U.S. plans to buy 100 million more doses from Pfizer-BioNTech and 100 million more from Moderna, he said. That's a 50% increase in the order for each vaccine, increasing the planned supply from 400 million to 600 million, Biden said. Pfizer and Moderna are working to step up production. Biden added that the additional vaccine supply will be enough to vaccinate 300 million Americans by the end of the summer and the beginning of fall. U.S. consumers may be about to get the first standards for face masks. From CNN's Carrie Enriquez and Sandy Lamont. A draft of the first national mask evaluation standard for consumer masks obtained by CNN shows proposed guidance would call for two tiers of certification. A level one mask would require the product to filter 20% of the particles, something that would make the mask easy to breathe through, but that would provide minimal protection. A level two mask would require high performance filtration of at least 50% of particles, but would provide less breathability. The standards are currently in development with ASTM International and the National Personal Protective Technology Laboratory, which is an arm of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. Currently, only medical-grade masks and respirators must meet standards. These include N95 masks, which are regulated for fit, filtration efficiency, flammability, and other qualities. The proposed standards will outline specific fit, design, performance, and testing requirements for face masks and coverings, according to a draft of the standards provided to CNN by the ASTM International. The draft evaluates both single-use and reusable masks and outlines specific requirements. For instance, the standards would prohibit the use of vents, valves, or any other feature that allows airflow to bypass filtration, though there are exceptions to this that reflect current CDC guidance. The review process is ongoing, and these guidelines are subject to further review and change. The drafted guidelines will be further reviewed next week. The ASTM draft standard currently is far different from standards required for masks in several European countries. Germany, Austria, and France are now requiring people wear masks with a minimum filtration efficacy of 80 to 90% while on public transport, shopping, or in public areas. Now we'll move on to news from around the state from the Texas Tribune. Governor Greg Abbott pushes legislature to protect businesses from coronavirus-related lawsuits, by Mitchell Furman. Governor Greg Abbott is pushing state lawmakers to protect individuals and companies that opened businesses during the pandemic against coronavirus-related lawsuits, he said Tuesday. It's another in a long line of Abbott's attempts to support businesses despite the worsening public health crisis and ongoing economic turbulence in Texas. While the governor did not provide specifics about what protections he wants businesses to have, he said his focus is on reducing lawsuits and creating more jobs. He told a table of business leaders Tuesday in San Antonio that businesses have gone above and beyond to remain open during the pandemic. And yet those same businesses, they face the threat of potential lawsuits for the fact that they opened up, he said. Many workers in Texas, however, have already registered coronavirus complaints with the federal government. Texans have filed at least 917 coronavirus-related complaints against employers with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Without providing a reason, OSHA has closed 820 of those cases as of January 10th. U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican, Texas, unsuccessfully pushed for federal legislation that would have included similar civil liability protections for businesses. But legislative provisions Cornyn authored were not included in Congress's latest coronavirus relief package. We can't rely on Congress to do the job for us, said George Christian, senior counsel with Texas Civil Justice League, which advocates for business protections and tort reform. Even if something finally happens in Washington, this legislation is stronger and permanent so that no Texan has to worry about a lawsuit unless they did something knowingly and with flagrant disregard for appropriate public health protocols. While Abbott has allowed businesses to stay open for in-person operations during the worst of the pandemic, intensive care units are completely full in more than 50 hospitals across the state, businesses, workers, and consumers have long said they have been confused by the governor's patchwork of coronavirus-related rules. He has implemented, reversed, and tweaked several orders throughout the course of the pandemic that have simultaneously varied widely by county and region, depending on the pandemic's grip on a particular area. In the spring, the state was among the country's first to reopen for in-person business in order to spur what Abbott and other state leaders hoped would be a strong economic recovery. But now, a year after the first known coronavirus case emerged in Texas, the state's unemployment rate remains over 7%, worse than the national unemployment rate and near Great Recession levels, as the uneven and unequal economic recovery continues. The Texas Civil Justice League has drafted a one-page framework outlining some of what lawmakers may tackle. Christian said State Senator Kelly Hancock will champion the legislative effort in the upper chamber. Hancock, a North Richmond Hills Republican, chairs the Senate Business and Commerce Committee. Christian said potential legislation is still being finalized. Neither the offices of Abbott or Hancock responded to requests for comment. At the same meeting with business leaders Tuesday, Abbott also emphasized Texas's need to improve statewide broadband internet access, which is currently under threat after a state fund that subsidizes rural network service is bleeding money and the state is cutting the amount of money it typically pays out to these service providers. Another thing that the pandemic has taught us is that the broadband access is not a luxury, Abbott said Tuesday. It is an essential tool for businesses, for education, as well as for accessing health care. We must use this session to ensure that every zip code in the state of Texas has access to broadband access. Abbott did not specify legislation to improve broadband access, but he said he generally wants Texas to cut red tape. Abbott has asked lawmakers to review every law he temporarily suspended during the pandemic, such as allowing the sale of alcohol to go. Carla Astudillo contributed to this story. Texans receiving federal food assistance could soon get more aid under Joe Biden's executive order, by Duncan Agnew. Texas families receiving pandemic-era federal food assistance for students who qualify for free or reduced-price school meals will soon see a 15% increase in their benefits. That additional aid is one of three food access issues President Joe Biden addressed in an executive order last week. The move comes as 16.5% of the state's 29 million residents said they do not always have enough food to eat in the last 7 days, according to the U.S. Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey. The U.S. Department of Agriculture last year approved the Pandemic Electronic Benefits Transfer Emergency School Meals Program, which sends money directly to families to make up for missed school meals due to virtual learning. That benefit will increase from $5.86 to $6.74 per child per school day. In the spring, nearly 3 million households in Texas received meal funding due to school closures. It's not clear yet when Texas families will begin receiving the increases, but a Texas Health and Human Services Commission spokesperson said that the department is working with the Texas Education Agency and the Texas Department of Agriculture on a plan. Once the plan is submitted and approved by the USDA, Food and Nutrition Service, these collaborative efforts will ensure that eligible children receive these benefits in an efficient manner, the spokesperson told the Tribune. HHSC expects to have an update on the status of benefits distribution at some point in the next few weeks, according to a spokesperson. Additionally, Biden last week ordered the U.S. Department of Agriculture to investigate whether it can allow states to increase Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program payments, commonly known as food stamps. Any expansion of those benefits could take a while to reach people's pockets, though, as the USDA first has to determine whether it has the authority to increase payments without congressional approval. If that attempt fails, Congress can still vote on a measure to approve an expansion of SNAP benefits, but it remains unclear how long Americans will have to wait for extra aid. One of the most positive signs, obviously, from this executive order is that it signals President Biden's commitment to addressing pandemic-related hunger, said Celia Cole, CEO of Feeding Texas, a hunger relief organization. It's acknowledging the fact that the pandemic has caused food insecurity to spike in this country and that there's really not an immediate end in sight. According to HHSA data, Texans filed 197,378 applications for SNAP benefits in December. That was down from 243,157 applications in November, but up from 144,803 applications in December 2019. Over 1.5 million individuals in the state, making up 5% of all Texans, received food relief last month. The most recent HHSC report estimated that nearly 13% of the state's residents, or 3.7 million people, are eligible for SNAP benefits. During the pandemic, Texas has seen food insecurity rates more than double, according to Cole. Current U.S. Census data estimates that 13.7% of adult Americans either sometimes or often did not have enough to eat in the last 7 days. Out of all 50 states, Texas registered the fourth highest rate of food scarcity in the last week. Meanwhile, President Biden has also directed the USDA to revise the Thrifty Food Plan, which establishes food costs and serves as the basis for SNAP payments. The plan was last updated in 2006, and critics say that it no longer provides a realistic pricing model for a healthy and nutritious diet. Modernizing that protocol could lead to more benefits for SNAP-eligible households, according to Cole. SNAP benefits typically decrease as an individual's income increases, but Congress last year allowed all eligible applicants to receive the full benefit for a given household size. However, a staggering 40% of all SNAP recipients nationwide are already qualified for the maximum benefit. So that food relief effort earlier in the pandemic did little to solve the problems of the most vulnerable people. It didn't do anything back in the spring to help those folks who were already getting the maximum, Cole said. And because they were already getting the maximum, we know that they are the poorest families. And so this is really about making sure that the SNAP program is doing the most it can to help the poorest families getting those benefits. Biden's executive order also asked the USDA to work with the Department of Justice on possible solutions that would allow for additional funding for the lowest income SNAP recipients. if the DOJ determines that the USDA has the legal authority to allow states to expand their SNAP payments to the most impoverished households, Cole hopes Governor Greg Abbott will take advantage of that opportunity immediately. A spokesperson for Abbott did not immediately respond to a request for comment Tuesday. Texans filed more than 4 million unemployment claims last year. For months, the state's unemployment rate has been near or above what it was during the worst of the Great Recession. With food insecurity so widespread across the state, recovery will be long and arduous. However, SNAP benefits remain widely recognized as one of the best ways to stimulate the economy during a crisis. When the government shells out money on food stamps, all of that funding gets injected back into local economies thanks to spending at local grocery stores. A recent analysis from the USDA's Economic Research Service estimates that $1.54 in economic activity results in every federal dollar spent on SNAP benefits. We do not see food insecurity levels going down anytime soon. We don't know how long it's going to take, Cole said. People who were enrolled in the kind of low-wage service industry jobs that got so badly hit by the pandemic, we don't know how long it's going to take for those jobs to come back, and even when they do, it's going to take a long time for those families to get back on their feet and make up for the loss of income and the other challenges that the pandemic poses. Now we'll return to national news. January has been the deadliest month for COVID-19, with nearly 80,000 lives lost so far in the U.S. by Madeline Holcomb, CNN, published January 27th. January has already become the worst month for U.S. COVID-19 deaths since the start of the pandemic. As of Tuesday, there have been more than 79,000 coronavirus fatalities, topping the previous record set in December by more than 1,000, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. The grim milestone underpins the growing demand from state officials for more vaccines so that Americans can be inoculated more quickly. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden's COVID-19 coordinator, Jeff Zients, told governors that allocations would increase by around 16% starting next week, according to a source with knowledge of the call. Biden has pushed for 100 million vaccination shots in the first 100 days of his presidency, but with a long road ahead for vaccinations, he also called for 100 days of mask wearing. The brutal truth is that it's going to take months before we can get the majority of Americans vaccinated. Months. In the next few months, masks, not vaccines, are the best defense against COVID-19, Biden said while announcing the federal government would buy and distribute more vaccine doses from Moderna and Pfizer. With those additional doses, Biden said there would be enough to fully vaccinate 300 million Americans, nearly the entire U.S. population, by the end of summer or early fall. Supply of vaccines not meeting demand. Struggling after the stress of nearly a year of responding to the pandemic, states are eager to administer vaccines quickly and attempt a return to life as normal. We have to defeat it because Mississippians are done. We're done burying loved ones who were lost to this virus. We're done with stressed hospitals. We're done with the fearful talk of lockdowns and shutdowns. We're ready for community again, said Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who announced that the state celebrated about 200,000 vaccines delivered. The director of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention said he was very encouraged by the new presidential administration's approach to vaccinations, but that the state is still struggling with the dearth of vaccines. We know that right now the number of individuals who want to be vaccinated greatly outstrips the supply of vaccine that we have available, Dr. Nirav Shah said. Colorado Governor Jared Polis said his conversations with the Biden administration have made him feel hopeful about the future of vaccine distribution, but that we cannot yet count on additional supply yet. Even if the administration delivers on the 16% increase in allocations promised, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo told MSNBC's Nicole Wallace that won't be enough. We're functionally out. We start to get a new allocation over the next few days, Cuomo said. Variants stoke demand and fears. Adding to the public fears is the spread of variants of the coronavirus. On Tuesday, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear announced that two cases of the variant first identified in the United Kingdom have been confirmed in the state. The variant has been shown to spread more quickly and easily, according to the CDC modeling. And a UK report released Friday said there is a realistic possibility that the new variant has a higher death rate than other variants. The threat of variants has made reopening the state a greater concern in California, a recent epicenter of the pandemic in the U.S., Los Angeles County Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer said. This would not be the time to think just because we are reopening that things are looking rosy, she said, noting that asymptomatic spread is a problem. We do need to move through the next few weeks with caution. At many other points where we've been reopening our sectors, we in fact have seen a bump up in our cases. We really can't afford that. For his part, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla tried to calm fears around the variants with assurances that the groundwork is already being laid to fight them. School reopening safety. Meanwhile, there was a glimmer of good news Tuesday for parents who are hoping to return their kids to school. A report from the CDC said that with the right mitigation strategies, it's possible to open K through 12 schools for in-person learning with minimal COVID-19 transmission. Those mitigation strategies include wearing masks, social distancing, and limiting time in shared outdoor spaces, according to the study from the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report. In Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine said he aims to have anyone who works in a school receive their first vaccine dose in the month of February, at the very least in hopes of sending all students back to school by March 1st. Currently, people older than 75 and those with certain medical conditions are able to receive vaccines. On February 1st, those 70 and older and employees of K-12 schools will be eligible for the vaccine, he said during a news conference Tuesday. Schools reopening have been a priority for many officials, as students across the country have spent months learning remotely, but local leaders have approached the return in various ways. Of the 20 largest school districts in the country, 9 are currently all online, 8 offer a choice of either full in-person or all online, 2 have a hybrid plan, and 1 in Hawaii varies plans based on infection rates among the different islands. And that is your coronavirus update for this Wednesday, January 27th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up next, we'll bring you the program Eyes on Success. Following that, we'll have USA Today with national news at 2 o'clock. At 3, the local news broadcast. Here are some of the articles our volunteers are reading today. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, frack ban threatens southeast New Mexico. More than 15,000 on Midland health list for vaccine. Council split about affordable housing development in North Midland. From the Odessa American. County thwarted in bid for mass hub. State tabs medical center hospital instead. New beginning. Jesus House finally has ribbon cutting. And mass vaccines effort running smoothly. MCH and City Partnership has vaccinated almost 5,000 so far. Those articles and more at 3 o'clock, and then at 6, more news from the Wall Street Journal. Thank you for being with us today. We'll return at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon with more news. Meanwhile, stay safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 52 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 30s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
When I walked in the door, they figured they could hire me cheap, and they were right. I agreed to go to work for a song and a dance, and because I just wanted to get started. My dad had encouraged me. He said, go to work for this small company. They're doing computers. You never know what will happen.
And that is how the long and illustrious career of today's guest was launched.
We'll be speaking with Eric Damery, who is currently Vice President of Software Product Management of Freedom Scientific of Aspero Company, which is a worldwide leader in providing assistive technology for visually impaired people. We know we were interested in learning more about his career path, and we assume you will be too. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Eric Damery and represents one of Pete's wishes come true.
If I had to pick a tip to share with consumers right now, I think I would lean towards something that just rolled out in the most recent update of the JAWS Infusion 2021 product. In these days of having to interact on Zoom for meetings or Teams or whatever it is that you might be using to communicate with other folks, one of the things that we've desperately needed in the screen reader was the ability to quiet the screen reader down so you could navigate while you're listening to the meeting. If they're both speaking at the same volume, it makes it very difficult to be navigating with JAWS and listening to someone else talk. You know, you could do this before if you went in through the control panel and the audio devices and find it and adjust it, but that wasn't very convenient. So we added a new feature in. And if you're running the latest release, you can get to it right now and try it out. You hold down the JAWS key, insert key, hit the space bar, and then you'll hear the little layered mode sound. And then you hit the letter V for volume. And then you hit the letter J for JAWS. And at that point, you can use the arrow keys or page up and page down to adjust your JAWS volume without interfering with the system volume. So you can still listen to the meeting and quiet JAWS down. And this is a great feature, and I think lots of folks that are using Zoom today or listening to these podcasts or editing audio, you'll love that feature.
And I've already taken advantage of that. I was all set to put in a suggestion to Freedom Scientific to say, hey, can there be an easy way of adjusting JAWS volume relative to other applications? And then all of a sudden, it came out.
So Eric mentioned that that's one example of using layered keystrokes in JAWS, and later on in this program, Pete will give a demonstration of how to get the most effectiveness out of using layered keystrokes.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Eric and learning about his company, Freedom Scientific, a subsidiary of Vispero.
Eric, you've been with us on the show in the past, but for people who may not know you, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Eric Damery, and I joined into this industry in 1994. I've served as the Vice President of Software Product Management for Freedom Scientific, reaching back to when we were formed in 2000 and prior to that with Henter Joyce. And I served in several roles, business development, sales, and just all around bottle washer back in the beginning.
You've done it all. I've been around for a long time.
Yeah. I always tell people I'm the old guy in the company, but I'm not the oldest guy in the company.
These days you're calling yourself Vispero, and that's a lot larger umbrella than many people may realize. Can you give us a quick overview of what Vispero contains these days?
Sure. Well, maybe it helps if we go back to the beginning. Back in the 1990s, really before there was any money outside the industry that had come in, there were lots of small companies, Henter Joyce being one of them, who I worked for. Ted and Mel Henter started that company with Bill Joyce back in the late 80s. And some of the other smaller companies, Blazy Engineering and Ark and Stone, who were the makers of OpenBook and Win. And somewhere in the late 90s, some venture capital money came along and decided to want to try and roll some of these companies up. And it was Freedom Scientific that got formed in 2000, and that was an acquisition of Henter Joyce and Blazy Engineering put together, and then they acquired OpenBook and win from Arkenstone. Arkenstone was a nonprofit organization, so we just acquired those products from them.
I just interject at this point that a couple of years ago, we did a pair of shows in which we got together the founders of those three companies, so Ted Henter, Dean Blasey, and Jim Fruchterman, and we got the three of them talking together, and that was just so much fun and so interesting.
Yeah, for those folks that have been around and been customers long enough to remember those guys, they were the pioneers, really, in a lot of the technology here with hardware and software, and some of the stuff Jim Fruchterman did was just unbelievable as well. And so Freedom Scientific had gotten formed, and then we switched over to a couple of different venture capital companies along the way. But back in 2016, I think it was, another venture capital company acquired Freedom Scientific and then Enhanced Vision and Optelec first and then Enhanced Vision afterwards. And also we picked up AI Squared along the way, the makers of ZoomText. And we really put all of these companies together under the Vespero umbrella. So we've really kept the company names of Freedom Scientific, Optelec, and Enhanced Vision. We have three distinct brands, and everything is under the Vespero umbrella. And today there's over 400 employees within these three different organizations. We have employees scattered around the world.
Quite impressive.
And even before it became, shall we say, trendy in 2020, you've had a number of people with special skills working remotely anyway.
Yes, that was true from the beginning. You guys know Glenn Gordon well, who came into Henter Joyce the same year that I did. And Glenn was actually a customer of Ted Henter's for a number of years. And he came on board. Ted was having, you know, some change in personnel and needed to get somebody on board to lead the JAWS for Windows effort. And Glenn decided that he didn't want to be blocked out of using Windows computers in the future, so figured this was a good time to join. So as a screen reader user, he came on board, became the architect, really, for the Windows product.
I have to give Glenn Gordon a lot of credit. How Pete and Glenn met was Pete was a JAWS user, and Pete's pretty good with a computer, and he can wrestle most computers to the ground and force them to do what he wants. But every once in a while, he'd run into a problem with JAWS, and he'd submit it as a problem to the team. And, of course, none of them were easy problems, and they'd all get elevated to Glenn. And instead of getting annoyed because this guy kept submitting difficult problems, he finally called up one day, and he said, "Okay, Pete, let's talk about this." And that's how they became friends.
Yep, and that's exactly, you know, Glenn's done that with lots of users over the years. He likes to pick up the phone and call people and get into the conversations. And then talking with users, you know, Glenn has a place in his heart for people who use this technology. And you know, we do this because we want to see it succeed for folks.
And it makes all the difference in the world to the end users.
Yep.
Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners. Underwriting pairs the impact of targeted marketing with the integrity of community goodwill.
Learn more by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is actually part one of a two-part series where we talk with Eric Damery about his path through the field of access technology.
You mentioned in the introduction Glenn Gordon, and of course, he's totally blind, but when I think of the name Eric Damery, what comes to mind is a person who is very experienced and facile with screen readers developed primarily for the blind, but you are actually fully sighted and not visually impaired at all. So we wanted to talk today a little bit about how you came to that position, and if we hop into our time machine, how far do we have to go back to start that story?
Well, I never heard of the term screen reader until 1993. That was the year that I heard of what one was. But what led me to find out and what led me into this industry was that I grew up in a family with a visually impaired member. My dad was a blinded veteran from the Korean War days. And so I grew up in a household around someone who needed to keep track of where they put things and, you know, make sure the scissors aren't left on the counter. And you know, since my dad was a sighted person growing up, he had worked on automobiles and he did all of these, you know, mechanical things. He was very mechanically inclined. So when he lost his vision, and it was kind of gradual from his 20s till he wasn't totally blind until in his 50s, but he didn't have enough vision to drive. And he really couldn't read other than with a very small pocket magnifier he would pull out and get right on top of paper. So he really couldn't read and write well. But he knew how to do things. And so I never thought of him as someone who was, you know, impaired in any way. He couldn't drive a car, but he still came to the baseball game when I was a kid growing up. And he made sure he sat behind the screen because he couldn't see if the ball was coming at him. But, you know, I didn't feel like I lived with somebody who had an impairment at all.
Yes, he was just differently abled.
That's right. And I learned how to work around that. And I think you just learn some things that you don't realize you're learning them because you're around somebody who's visually impaired. But, you know, it was back then in 1993 when they had retired and I moved them to Florida around 1986. And it was my first time in Florida in 1986, and I kind of made up my mind right then that this was a great place to be, and why would I want to wait until I retire to get here? I was living in Massachusetts. It was terrible cold. I'm not a big fan of the cold weather. So in 1989, I was in a transition position with a company that got bought and was moving. And I made the move at that point to Florida to start over again. So I came to Florida in 89, finished up some school, and had gone to work for a small software company that did report writing software here in Clearwater. And then that job kind of came to an end, and I was looking for something to do. And it was then that my dad called up and said, hey, there's a company coming by with some new technology that I'm going to try through the VA. Why don't you come down? And he thought I was a computer wizard. Well, I didn't know anything about computers. I sold software, but I didn't really have a computer and didn't know how to use them at that time.
Oh, geez. So your background was in marketing and sales then?
Yes, and I worked for a computer company, and we did testing of, you know, mini computers, SCSI drives and things like that. So I did a lot of hardware testing, but didn't own a personal computer. And so when I saw my dad was getting one of the Arkenstone computers from Arkenstone with OpenBook software on it, and Ted Henter's company, Henter Joyce, was the Florida rep for Arkenstone, so their salesperson brought the computer to my dad's place, and I happened to go there that day and saw how it worked and got the book, and it was very simple, and I was so impressed with the fact that my dad could now read the mail without having to have a battle with my mother at the kitchen table reading the mail every week.
That was a miracle back then to have a device.
It was a miracle. So I was so impressed, and I was like, I was looking for something interesting to do, and I thought, this looks like it'd be great. And I got on the phone with Arkenstone because I figured I'm not going to call Ted. I'm going to call this Arkenstone company. I don't want to mess around here in St. Pete. I want to go big school. So I called Arkenstone. And they had a sales person, and I talked to her, and she said, listen, you need to call Ted Henter because you got to get your feet wet before you can do this stuff, and he's the place to start. So I said, okay. And that's when I went and I met Ted and his wife, and Ted had just fired his salesperson, who was the person that delivered my dad's computer because he didn't really like salespeople.
Oh, geez.
But Ted had a general manager that had just started with the company, a fellow named Jerry Bowman. He met Ted because they were on the board of the Florida Abilities Organization. And Jerry used to give Ted a ride back and forth, and Ted told Jerry that, you know, he had a small company and he really needed some help and he didn't have any HR people. And Jerry kind of, I think, felt sorry for him and came in and said, I'll do some HR work for you. So Jerry convinced Ted he's got to hire a sales guy. And when I walked in the door, they figured they could hire me cheap, and they were right. I agreed to go to work for a song and a dance, and because I just wanted to get started. My dad had encouraged me. He said, go to work for this small company. They're doing computers. You never know what will happen.
So this was the beginning of Henter Joyce. Ted was still a salesman for Arkenstone, but was just starting his new company?
Well, he had Henter Joyce. They had Jaws for DOS. They sold Blazy products. They sold Arkenstone products. They sold Braille printers. He did a little bit of everything.
Oh, interesting.
So when they hired me, we sold AI Squared's products too. Mm-hmm. And so when he hired me, my job was to be the Florida rep to sell systems. And I would connect with consumers or organizations around the state, and people wanted to see what the Arkenstone product could do. And I'd say, well, listen, if you can put together a group of people, I'll come over and show it to you and them at the same time. And I used to go to different people's houses, and they'd have all their friends from their local NFB chapters or whatever. They'd invite everybody to the house, and I'd come over and I'd pull out the Arkenstone computer and answer questions and show them how it worked and then start taking orders.
Reminds me of the old Tupperware parties.
That's exactly what it was. I was doing Arkenstone Tupperware parties, you know, and then I'd come back through the next month and deliver systems to these different people that, you know, process orders either through the VA or the local blind services office or purchase them themselves. And I would go to people's homes and set up these systems and show them how to get started with it. And I really enjoyed that. But it wasn't too long after that Ted pulled me aside and he said, listen, this is great, but he didn't get in this to be a dealer for everybody else. He got in this to make Jaws. And he said, we really want to focus in on the Jaws product. And I said, okay. And I started working with the dealers around the country, and I decided if I was going to really understand and sell Jaws and be able to explain it to people, I better learn how to use it.
Well, you know, like you, I am also fully sighted. All I know about how to work Jaws is if you hit insert F4, it stops. But you actually learned how to work with a screen reader as a sighted person.
It was hard as a sighted person to be able to figure out a screen reader when you're doing your job. So what I would do is at night I would take the tower computer. We didn't have laptops then. I had a tower computer. I'd unplug it all, and I'd take the computer and the mouse and the keyboard and the power cord back to my house. And I had to take the mouse because you couldn't run the computers back then unless you plugged a mouse in, even though you weren't using it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd leave the monitor at the office, and I'd just take the computer, the mouse and the keyboard and the power cord, and I'd go home, and I'd spend a couple of 3 hours at night starting to figure out the experience of using a computer without seeing it.
And that's how you became a user.
And that's how I became a user. So I literally learned Windows from a keyboard with a screen reader.
So this is probably the right time for you to explain what JAWS is an acronym for.
Sure, Job Access with Speech.
You know, as you say, though, it's hard to learn a screen reader if you still have access to a screen that you can use and see, because it's such a crutch. When something doesn't work out, you get a little frustrated, you just peer at the screen. And that
way
you never learn the screen reader. But you managed to do that, which is why you've become one of the sighted people who's a real expert with a screen reader.
Yes, and I've tried to explain that to lots of people over time, that you will never learn it if you can see it. I mean, as a sighted user, you have the benefit of knowing what it all looks like, but you have to kind of, as a visually impaired person, and you know this, Pete, that you kind of, you know, you learn your way around. So it's like when you get up at night to go to the bathroom and it's dark, as a sighted person, I don't have to turn the lights on. I know how many steps it is to get here. You just kind of learn that. You
yes,
map
because
your way.
You have to, yes, of course.
Exactly. And so when I can sit down at a computer today with no screen and no screen reader, and I could still do something. I could log in. I could get Outlook running. And I could even send an email message to somebody without ever seeing it or listening to it, because I just know the keystrokes. I know how to get there. I know exactly what that takes.
You know, I think that's what made a big difference for me in the early days when Xerox had changed from using DOS to Windows 3.1. And there were a variety of screen readers available, and people said, how's Pete going to use a computer? And I must have tried three or four of them, and they were just terrible. I just couldn't work with them. I was just about to give up when I tried JAWS, and it worked, and I was able to do all of what I needed to do in Windows. And I figured out the reason why was it was a blind person who developed it. They had to make it work.
That's exactly right. And that is very, very significant in the success of the technology. You know, I kind of filled the role of product manager back then, but even today, I mean, I don't kid myself. I am not the brains behind figuring out what we should do. I try and pull that information out of users, and we have so many good users. I mean, so it was customers out there, and there's a lot of them, thousands of people that I've had an opportunity and the pleasure to meet and work with over the years.
And now here's Pete with the promised demonstration of how to use layered keystrokes in JAWS to enable you to have access to many more keystroke commands.
Basically, there are just so many keys on the keyboard, and you quickly run out of hotkeys that you want to assign to special functions. And this is a way of extending the number of hotkeys that can be used. You get into the layered commands by hitting JAWS key plus space, like Eric said.
Space.
And now you have a whole lot of extra hotkeys that are available to you. To find out which ones, hit the question mark, and you'll come up with a help text describing many of the layered commands.
Heading level 2 web browsers. The following commands are available in browsers.
So this brings up a bunch of headings. The first heading is a list of layered commands that are available for use in browsers. I'll hit the H to go to the next heading.
General commands, heading level 2.
These are general commands that can be used.
Editors, email, and word processors, heading level 2.
These are some more hotkeys for editors and email, etc.
Messaging applications, heading level 2.
These are some hotkeys that are available for messaging applications like Skype.
Secondary layers, heading level 2.
And there's some even deeper layers with some more functionality. Now I can just hit escape to get out of the layered command or out of this help topic.
Escape.
So several of the functions in here that I often use are things like performing OCR on the PC screen or on documents. There are layers for dealing with Skype calls and answering calls and looking at chat messages in Skype. There are layers for reviewing what JAWS said. But one of the features I really like, we talked about the number of hotkeys that are available. And really, who can remember all of those hotkeys? There are a ton of them. So one of the things I like to do is to get into the JAWS layered command to search for these hotkeys. And you can do that by hitting JAWS key plus space again.
Space.
So I'm in the layered command. And then if I hit J.
Search for JAWS commands dialog. Search for colon edit.
And it brings up a search field where I can search for JAWS command. So let's say that I wanted to search for how to navigate through headings on a web page. So let's type heading.
Heading. Move the next heading. H heading level 3 link.
Now I hit tab, and there's a bunch of headings here. And the first one says, move to next heading. Hit H. Well, I happen to know that one. But let's hit H again.
Move the prior heading. Shift plus H. Dots 1-2-5-7 heading level 3 link.
So this tells me how I can move to the previous heading, both by hitting Shift plus H on a keyboard or how to do it on a Braille display. If I arrow down underneath this heading, it gives me a more detailed description of how this function works and what it does.
Move to the prior heading on an HTML page. Link control plus JAWS key plus Shift plus Enter.
And there's a link if you want to perform that function right there. Let's go to the next heading by hitting H.
Move the next heading at level 3. 3. Dots 2-5 heading level 3 link.
So now I can move to headings at specific levels. So this feature can be very useful to help you search for and remember hotkeys that you might have forgotten, or just to see if there is a hotkey to perform a certain function. So the JAWS layered command can be very helpful. Again, if you need help with that, JAWS key plus space followed by H brings up a virtual viewer with help on the various keys and how they can be used.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Fispero and Freedom Scientific and their products, and how to contact Eric Damery directly.
So you can reach Freedom Scientific or Vispero. You can use either one of them, freedomscientific.com or Vispero, V-I-S-P-E-R-O.com, and get to our web pages. You can write to me directly, edamery, E-D-A-M-E-R-Y, at vispero.com. And we look forward to talking with you folks again.
Is there a phone number people can use?
Oh, yes. In the United States, you can use an 800 number, 800-444-444.